The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
On the evening of March 31st, 2006, Brian Schaefer, a 27-year-old med student, went out with friends to celebrate the start of spring break. The night began with bar hopping and ended at the Ugly Tuna Saluna, a popular spot in Columbus, Ohio. At 1:55 a.m., Brian was captured on surveillance footage outside the bar chatting with two women. Moments later, he said goodbye and walked back toward the entrance, telling friends he was going to speak with the band. He was never seen or heard from again. Despite all the investigative efforts, no trace of Brian has ever been found, leaving an entire community still wondering, what happened to Brian Schaefer? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly. Maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, Brian Schaefer. This is a case that some of you may have already heard of. It's been covered by multiple podcasts. It's been featured on YouTube channels. And part of the reason for that is because it's a complete mystery and it's a head-scratcher. All the cases that I talk about, they can affect you in different ways. It's emotional, it has a physical toll, it can have a mental toll, because you sit here and you're scrambling your brain trying to put a puzzle together without all the pieces. And this case is the epitome of that. It seems so simple. It's harder to understand why it hasn't been solved than how to solve it. It just seems like on the surface, this case shouldn't even be in question at this point. The way it went down, in the area it went down in, we should know what happened to Brian at this point, and yet here we are 18 years later with more questions than answers. And like I said, this is a massive case. So in this episode, I'm going to be focusing on the facts reported in newspaper articles and by the family. I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of discussing things I've seen on Reddit or different web sleuthing sites, because once you start unpacking that, I have to cover them all because people will think I'm being skewed if I don't. I will say I've looked into them. I will say I've watched numerous YouTube videos, I've listened to numerous podcasts, I've looked on the Reddit forums, and some of the theories that have been put out there are some of the same opinions that I have. So we will be discussing them, but again, I want to focus on what we know to be true at this point so that you guys can come to your own conclusions without me skewing your judgment by ingraining different theories that have not been substantiated by any law enforcement entity or the family. So keep that in mind as we go through this investigation. And as always, you can go over to those forums and look up that information yourself. But I want to dive right into it. Let's get into this week's case. Brian Randall Schaefer was born on February 11th, 1979 in Ohio to parents Randy and Renee. He grew up with a younger brother, Derek, who he was very close to. In 2004, Brian started medical school at Ohio State University in Columbus, and during his first year, he met Alexis, a fellow student, and they began dating. Their relationship quickly became more serious, and at Christmas in 2005, Renee gave them a trip to Miami for spring break in 2006. The couple was thrilled, and Brian even talked to his mom about possibly proposing to Alexis during the trip. But on March 6, 2006, the Schaefer family experienced a devastating loss when Renee passed away from a rare form of cancer. According to Columbus Monthly, Brian really struggled with his mom's death. The two were extremely close, and her passing really hit him hard. In the weeks following Renee's death, Brian and Derek became even closer, and Brian made it a point to check on his younger brother often. Meanwhile, Brian and Alexis stayed focused on finishing their midterms before their upcoming trip to Miami. They planned to leave on April 3rd, just days after midterms ended, and Brian even shared his excitement about the trip on his MySpace page. On Friday, March 31st, midterms were finally over and spring break began. Alexis had to leave town at the last minute for a family emergency, but she assured Brian she'd be back in time for their vacation. That evening, Brian went to dinner with his dad at Outback Steakhouse, and Randy later told the Ohio Missing Dispatch that this was an emotional meal for him because Outback was a favorite spot of him and Renee. And according to Randy, Brian told him, quote, "It's all right, Dad. I'll be with you as much as I can." Randy also noted that Brian seemed exhausted from midterms, and he was also preparing for an upcoming board exam, but despite all of this, he was still looking forward to his trip and a chance to unwind. Before parting ways, Brian and Randy made plans for Brian to come over the next day and help him clean up around the house, so they said their goodbyes, and that was the last time Randy ever saw his son. Later that evening, Brian talked with his friend William Clint Florence, I'm going to refer to him as Clint throughout the rest of this episode, and the two decided to go bar hopping in Columbus. At around 9:30 p.m., Clint drove to Brian's apartment, where they left their cars and headed to the Ugly Tuna Saluna, a bar located in the South Campus Gateway on North High Street. According to HLN, the Ugly Tuna Saluna was a one-room bar on the second floor with a balcony overlooking the Gateway Courtyard. At the time, the back area of the bar was still under construction. Shortly before 10 p.m., Brian called Alexis while he was at the bar, and the two talked for a little bit, discussing things like their trip to Miami, which was coming up in just 3 days. Alexis later said that Brian sounded normal during the call, and he told her that he loved her before hanging up the phone, but this was the last time that she would ever talk to Brian. Now, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Brian was supposed to go to his father's house the following morning on April 1st to help with cleaning, but he didn't show up, and Randy just assumed that Brian had forgotten or was too busy, so he wasn't immediately concerned. Meanwhile, Alexis was trying to contact Brian throughout the day, but her calls and texts went unanswered. According to HLN, by the end of the day, she drove back to Columbus and went to Brian's apartment, where she found his car parked outside and his bed untouched, but there was no sign of Brian anywhere. We're just scratching the surface on this case. We have a lot more to dive into, but before we do, let's take a quick break.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
All right, we're back, and as you can imagine, based on what Alexis observed and the fact that Brian wasn't calling her back, she became concerned, so she reached out to Clint, who told her that he hadn't seen Brian since the night before. Clint then recounted the events following Brian's call with Alexis. He said that after leaving the Ugly Tuna, they went to the Short North Tavern, arriving around 10:30 p.m. Around an hour later, they walked to Brothers Bar and Grill, where they met up with Clint's friend, Meredith Reed. Clint went on to say that he and Brian had been drinking pretty heavily, so Meredith offered to drive them back to the Ugly Tuna. So the three returned to that location, parking in the South Campus Gateway garage, and according to Clint, at around 2 a.m., Brian told him and Meredith that he wanted to speak with the band, and they didn't see him again after that. Now, Clint did say that he and Meredith both tried calling and texting Brian, but there was no response. They also searched the bar and the bathrooms but couldn't find him. So as the Ugly Tuna Saluna closed, they waited outside for Brian, and Meredith even tried calling him again, but there was still no response. So eventually they thought, hey, maybe he might have walked home alone, so they left the bar. So I want to pause for a second and talk about this, because this is the first part in the story of Clint relaying what happened to Alexis where I have some questions. And this may be anecdotal, so please weigh in down in the comments below. Let me know if I'm wrong on this, but just in my own experience, if I go to the bar with one or two other people and we're just there together and it's a populated place, for the most part, we stick together, with the exception of maybe running to the bathroom. And even in those cases, a lot of times when you say, hey, I'm going to go, you know, run to the bathroom real quick, that's usually when your friend will go, you know, I might as well go too, because why go alone? But for the most part, we stick together. And it's odd to me that they came in together. It's not like they're in a large group. Why, when Brian said, I'm going to go talk to the band real quick, what were Meredith and Clint doing that they wouldn't or couldn't go with him? What was the reason why Brian said he was going to go talk to them by himself in the first place? That seems odd to me, especially as you're starting to wind down and get near the end of the night. I'm sure the bar was starting to empty out. Why wouldn't they have just stuck together? I pose this question because, as we're going to talk about more later, there are some rumors, if you will, that there had been an argument that night with Clint and Brian. Something had happened. And I do wonder, based on what we're going to talk about in a little bit, if there's more to this part of the story where there's some truth to it, but there's also some information being left out. The why. The why did they decide to separate? And I only bring this up because of why we're sitting here today. No one knows where Brian is. And this is the last point where anyone who knew him saw him. So it's a very important point of the story. And I think understanding why they decided to go their separate ways, even if it was only for a few moments, it's extremely important. So let me know what you guys think. Am I crazy on this one? Am I looking too deep into it? Or is this something that really needs to be explored more? Back to the story and Clint, because after they left the bar, assuming that Brian had went home alone, Clint claimed that he went to Brian's apartment and waited there for approximately 6 hours, but Brian never returned. So that was the story that Clint relayed to Alexis. And according to the Ohio Missing Dispatch, Alexis stayed at Brian's apartment until the evening of April 2nd, but there was still no sign of him. She was growing increasingly worried, so she decided to call Brian's father, Randy, who we've talked about multiple times in this episode, and told him that she didn't know where Brian was. They collectively decided to contact the police to report Brian missing, but officers initially refused to file a report, suggesting that they wait to see if Brian showed up for his flight to Miami the next morning. Randy insisted that Brian would not show up and pleaded with them to begin their search immediately, but again, they refused. This is going to frustrate a lot of people. It frustrates me. I've talked about this many times throughout this series, throughout this, the start of this podcast. I would like to know more specifics, because there's a difference between starting your investigation and searching for someone and filing a report. The official report doesn't need to be filed in order to go look for someone. There have been many occasions where just on the initial report, I've decided that we're not going to put it into NCIC, which is, you know, a database where if someone runs a certain person's name, it'll flag it. But I've sent officers out to a location, made some calls, knocked on some doors before ever filing a report, just to see if I could find this person and put the family and friends at ease. So I do want to know a little bit more information. From what I've gathered, it seems like they really didn't do anything. They just said, hey, wait to see if he shows up tomorrow. And if he doesn't, let us know. To me, that says they really just didn't do anything and they went on with their night. I would like to think that even if they didn't want to, quote unquote, officially file a report, they would send some officers out to maybe go visit the bar, to go look in the area, to try calling the phone number themselves, to go by Brian's apartment to see if anything stood out to them, maybe go check out his car to see if anything was off there. If they didn't do that, that's a big problem. I don't understand the rationale behind it. I know there are policies and procedures where you want to hold off a little bit, but if the person in question doesn't have a history of kind of doing these types of things, going off on their own, they don't have any reports of being a wayward child in the past, you have to take note of that and you have to use common sense. So if the father is reporting that this isn't common for his son, this is a college student, appears to have his stuff together, really random how they disappeared and the fact that they're not even calling or texting anyone back, that should supersede any policy or procedure. File the report, put him in the system. Worst case scenario, they're okay. No harm, no foul. I can tell you guys right here that anytime we've put someone into NCIC and they've turned out to be okay, it hasn't affected our police department or any other law enforcement entity in a negative way. Sure, you may be devoting some manpower to finding someone who doesn't need to be found. But in most instances, you have the ability to allocate those resources to do those things. If it's a very busy night, you may have to balance some stuff, but overall, there's time for it. And if they didn't do that, they should have. And I will tell you, in this case, that could be a deciding factor, because as we go over theories in the perspective, time is really important here, because we're talking a small window when Brian went from being with his friends to being completely off the radar. So if something happened to him and he had been hurt or he had been captured or taken somewhere or dumped somewhere, you would have to find that out almost immediately, or any evidence of that could be washed away. It could be taken away. It could be cleaned up. Or if Brian did this on his own, now he's got a further lead on you and there's no way of tracking him down. So that may not always be the case, but in this particular incident, it may have had a significant impact. We may never know for sure, but it's unfortunate that we even have to think about that. So April 3rd comes, and as Randy predicted, Brian did not show up for his flight to Miami, but he was determined to find answers. So even though he was not happy with the police department, he returned to the police station, and this time an official report was filed. According to HLN, after learning that Brian was last seen at the Ugly Tuna Saluna, police canvassed a 6 to 10 block area around the bar, hoping to find someone who had seen him, but unfortunately, no one had, or at least no one came forward to say that they had. The next step was to review surveillance footage, and while there were no cameras inside the bar itself, there were cameras at the main doors and at the emergency exit. So let's start with the camera outside the main doors. Footage from this camera showed Brian, Clint, and Meredith riding up the escalator to the second floor bar at around 1:15 a.m. And if you look at the video, it's up on the screen right now. Brian appeared to be in a good mood. He was walking and talking with friends. There doesn't appear to be anything out of the ordinary. It's a very short clip, but just taking it at face value, Brian seems fine. The next time Brian is seen on camera is at 1:55 a.m., when he's captured again outside the bar talking to two women, Amber and Brighton, who were friends of Clint's. And according to what we've reported, Clint was outside talking to these women as well. Now, this is one rumor I'm going to talk about only because I do think it could be important when we're talking about potential theories later. But there have been some reports that one of the women had suggested that Brian was flirtatious with her, and they even exchanged numbers. And if that's true, that's going to negate one of the theories that some people believe occurred here, which is that Brian set this all up and he took off under his own free will. And this was a plan that he had set in place. when you think about that theory, we'll talk about it more. It doesn't seem like he'd be out there flirting and grabbing a girl's number if he was planning on taking off and never returning. Just my opinion, but we'll discuss this again during the perspective. Now, as you're looking at the footage here, it does look at one point that maybe Brian was being motioned back into the bar, so he said goodbye to the women and walked in the direction of the entrance. But I want to point out here, it's assumed by a lot of people that he's walking back into the Ugly Tuna, and that very well may be the case. But I just want to make note, and you guys can see it for yourself right here. The video's on the screen. We can't tell for certain if he goes back in the bar. We don't know that. There's also a emergency/service exit out of frame here where he could have walked in that direction and still exited the building without going back in the bar. Do I know if that's what happened or not? I don't. But I want to point it out because we don't want to assume anything. Yes, it does look like he's walking back into the bar. And according to reports and accounts from Clint, that is what happened. But we don't have anything to substantiate that. And I just want to make that perfectly clear. And that is also the last time we have any footage of Brian. He was never seen on any camera again. And as I mentioned earlier, according to Clint, at around 2 a.m., which would have only been 5 minutes later, Brian said he was going to the stage area to talk to the band. But since there were no cameras inside the bar, we don't know if this actually happened because the interaction was never captured. Not the interaction between Brian and Clint or the interaction between Brian and the band. What was captured, however, was Clint and Meredith leaving the bar just minutes later. And the footage showed them standing outside the bar using their phones, likely calling and texting Brian to see where he was. So that account of them trying to reach Brian does seem valid. And I would assume, based on that footage, you would be able to confirm that information as a detective where you could look at their call records, match it up with the timestamps on the camera, and confirm that they did, in fact, call and text Brian upon exiting the bar, which would give more validity to their story. For the people that believe Clint and Meredith are involved, Brian was alive 5 minutes earlier. We know that for sure. We know that he was okay at that point. And to think 5 minutes later that the friends he was with would be calling or texting him, but somehow they were involved, that's extremely unlikely. So for the people that are questioning Clint, and there is some reasons why maybe you should, we're going to talk about that. But that does line up and it does give some credit to Clint and Meredith that what they're saying potentially about them splitting up is true. That something did happen where they got separated. And when Clint and Meredith went over to the bar to look for Brian and to see if he was with the band, he actually wasn't. And that's why they exited and proceeded to call him. We don't have that information for sure. Law enforcement has never confirmed that. But based on the footage, it would be very easy to dispute that claim if they were lying. And if they were, again, law enforcement has never released that information. But as Clint has said, they called and texted Brian a couple times. He didn't respond, so they decided to leave, and you do see them exiting the building, going down the escalator. And for anyone who's not on video here, maybe you're just listening, this is something that can confuse you as far as the layout of this building. It's not just the bar. The building is not entirely the bar. If you look it up, we'll throw a shot up here. You can kind of see an overview shot of the building. The bar is inside this building. There's other things in there. There's a little construction area that was going on at the time. We're going to talk about that. There's some theories with it. But it wasn't just one bar taking up this entire building. The escalator led up to the bar. So there was an area outside the bar that was still inside, and you're not out on the street yet. You'd have to go down the escalator. So if you get a chance, I strongly recommend that you look up this video and you watch the escalator footage so you can see it for yourself. And also we'll throw that photo up here so you can kind of see like a satellite view of what it would look like from the top side looking down at the building. It's important. I think it'll make a lot more sense as I'm explaining this to you what to actually visualize, because it threw me off at first when I was just reading about it. And the only other thing that I want to quickly mention about the building and the cameras that were installed is that police also reviewed the footage from a camera that had been monitoring the emergency exit, which led to an alley, and they did confirm that Brian wasn't seen leaving the building on that camera either. So I just wanted to put that out there. There has been some speculation about that, but law enforcement has said they reviewed that footage. They never saw any signs of Brian. So with no footage of him exiting the bar, investigators began looking into other ways he might have left. And according to the Ohio Missing Dispatch, police discovered a service exit that led to an elevator, which went down to the ground floor and opened into an area that was, quote, heavily under construction. The construction area was described as dark and difficult to navigate, and the exit itself was secured with a chain, though it was reportedly common for people to squeeze through a gap between the chain and the door. However, police didn't believe it was a likely exit for Brian, as he would have struggled to go through this area after drinking. But again, although it would have been difficult, it's not impossible. So other than the construction site, the only other possible ways to get out of that building from the second floor would have been jumping off the balcony or using a trash chute that was located inside. Now, as far as the balcony, I would think at that time of night, being outside a bar, if Brian had fallen or jumped off the balcony, someone would have seen or heard it. That doesn't appear to be the case. The trash chute, however, if something happened inside that bar that we're not aware of, and you wanted to get the victim out without anybody seeing it, is that viable? I would say so. So did he do this voluntarily? No, absolutely not. But if there's something more going on here that we're unaware of, I think the trash chute is in play. So with no plausible explanation as to how Brian exited the bar without being seen, police decided to expand their search by reviewing surveillance footage from nearby bars and businesses. But once again, they found no trace of him, which is extremely concerning. Even if he somehow got out of the building through a blind spot, maybe not even knowing he did, if he walked home, you would think that there would be something showing him walking by a bar or a business late at night, and yet there's nothing. And that's concerning because unless he was intentionally trying to avoid being seen, which I guess is possible, that means something went down and he got into a vehicle or he encountered someone. And because of that encounter, he was inside a vehicle or inside something where even though he may have passed a camera, you wouldn't know it was him. And that's concerning. And just as an interesting side note, Mel Magazine reported that Columbus has more closed circuit cameras than Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Toledo combined. Yet none of these cameras captured Brian. Not good. Now, in addition to scouring all the surveillance footage, investigators also interviewed the band that Brian had reportedly planned to speak with, along with bar staff and other patrons who had been there that evening. But according to what we know, no one had any useful information, and no one even remembered seeing Brian leave the bar. Law enforcement has kept a lot of this close to the chest, so we don't know exactly what they know, and there may have been something that was useful that we're just unaware of, but I can only report the facts as they've been relayed to us, and it's hard to believe that with all these people there, no one would have remembered seeing Brian, and yet, publicly, that's what's been reported. So don't kill the messenger. According to law enforcement, no one at this bar had any useful information about Brian, and he really didn't speak or wasn't seen by anyone. I find it hard to believe, but that's what we got. So the police continued interviewing people at the bar and also reviewing surveillance footage. And eventually, according to them, they accounted for everyone seen leaving the Ugly Tuna Saloon that night. The only person unaccounted for was Brian himself. Crazy. This is why this story is so fascinating. This is why many of you have spent a lot of time researching it, and I understand why. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Moto Casino, America.
Like a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
All right, we're back, and as I said in a few ways before the break, if Brian left that building, he didn't go out the way he came in. And I'm not the only one who believes that. One of the detectives working the case later told Dateline that he could say with, quote, 100% certainty that Brian did not leave the bar by going down the escalator. I think that's pretty clear based on the evidence we do have. Now, what was interesting was that in addition to making that statement, police also noted that if Brian somehow did manage to leave the bar undetected and attempted to make the 10-minute walk home back to his apartment, he would have potentially been an easy target. The area between the bar and his apartment was known for having a significant amount of crime, especially late at night. So why would they come out and say that? Why would they make that comment? I think they're probably giving some insight into what they believe happened. I think they're also leaving all options on the table. They're probably seeing the rumors that are being spread online and within that community, and they want to bring it back down to earth to say, hey, listen, this doesn't have to be some big conspiracy. It's possible Brian left the building and we didn't catch it. And based on the area he was in, just like any area with a lot of crime, if you're by yourself, you do become more susceptible to being a target of a crime. And that could be what happened here. Simple as that. Brian leaves the bar, it's undetected, and he encounters someone or a group of people, and things go south. I think they're just trying to bring some normalcy to this case to say, hey, I know a lot of people are concerned. There are people theorizing that he's still inside the building somewhere, being held against his will or trapped inside a wall or something of that nature. It doesn't have to be that complex. We're evaluating those theories. But it could be as simple as we just didn't catch him on camera and he was a victim of a crime. That's it. But regarding these theories suggesting that Brian could still be in the building or something happened to him, as I mentioned, yes, they put out this statement about him potentially encountering someone outside the building. They were still exploring all angles. In fact, after finding no evidence of how Brian left the bar, police conducted searches of the Ugly Tuna and the construction site using canine and cadaver dogs. But despite their efforts, no trace of Brian was found. So the search expanded to the dumpsters, landfills, and sewer lines. But again, nothing was uncovered. I do want to mention that going down the rabbit hole, I know I said I wasn't going to do this and I'm not going to go deep into it. I did see some things on Reddit and other forums that suggested there was a scent of Brian picked up near a dumpster or near a parking lot. And then it just went cold, suggesting that he may have been dumped in a dumpster or may have gotten into a car. Again, I couldn't find anything to substantiate those claims. If you have something, if you can provide a link, please do in the comment sections below and I will explore it. Now, according to HLN, the Olentangy River became a focus of the search because it was a half a mile from Brian's apartment. The river was searched multiple times, but no one ever found anything connected to Brian or suggesting that he had fallen in the river. The investigation continued, and in an interesting turn of events, at some point, the police learned that Brian and Clint had an argument in the days leading up to the night of Brian's disappearance. It's unclear at this point what that argument was about, but it didn't appear to be that serious enough to stop them from hanging out again because we obviously have them on footage doing so. But I do want to point out, and I believe I said it earlier, there are a few sources that reported that Clint and Brian got into an argument inside the Ugly Tuna right before Brian went missing. However, again, it's unclear how accurate that information is, but if true, I think it's very compelling and something that needs to be explored. We can talk about the fact that the last time 155 Brian is seen on camera, he's seen talking to two women, and Clint is supposedly right there as well. Just from my own experience, I've seen situations where you have you and a buddy or maybe a group of friends are talking to a group of women and you're flirting with them and maybe two guys have an interest in the same woman or one of the guys, you know, insult you or make fun of you in front of the women, and that can piss you off and that can cause an argument. So I wonder if that could have been a scenario which maybe caused Brian to say, yeah, I'm going to go see the band by myself. I know I brought up that question earlier as to why he would take off and go somewhere by himself and not ask them to come with him. But maybe that's what we could be looking at here. Again, these sources are not verified, but if true, if they were arguing inside the Ugly Tuna minutes before he went missing, it could be a critical part of the story. Now, I do want to preface that by saying it doesn't mean Clint is involved, but it may potentially explain why Brian went off on his own and why he went out a different exit than the exit he came in. That's why it's important to me. It may explain the mindset as to why Brian left the way he did, and it doesn't have to be as deep as this was some premeditated plan that he had. So it could have been something that just happened moments earlier that caused Brian to do what he did, and that's what I'm really interested in, because if we can't figure that out, then it gives more credence to the fact that something happened inside the bar and there may potentially be other people involved. As police continued digging into Brian's life, they learned that although Brian was in med school, his true dream was to be in a band. On his MySpace page, he wrote, quote, "I really love music, and this whole doctor thing is really just a job, only temporary, until I get my band together and we put out a record. I want to own an island someday, or at least a beach so I can listen to Buffett all day and drink margaritas with my senorita." This led police to consider whether Brian left voluntarily to pursue his dreams. However, they found no activity on his phone, bank accounts, or credit cards after his disappearance. They also learned that Brian hadn't received his share of his mother's life insurance payout, which was estimated to be around $20,000. So if he had planned on disappearing, which seems unlikely, it's even more unlikely that he would do so before receiving that much money. That $20,000 could have gone a long way, and without it, he would have needed to use his debit card or credit card, and as I just mentioned, there's no evidence of that. Let's switch gears and go back to Clint and Meredith, because there is a lot of speculation around them. Of course, they were the last two people to see Brian. And according to 614 Now, investigators asked Clint and Meredith to take a polygraph test, and Meredith agreed and passed, but Clint refused, stating that he had already told police everything he knew about Brian's disappearance. And in May, more than a month after Brian went missing, Clint and Meredith both hired lawyers and stopped giving interviews to police around that same time. Now, later that month, Clint moved to Tennessee, and he was eventually summoned to testify before a grand jury, but he refused to appear. As time went on, Randy grew increasingly desperate for answers about his son, so he wrote letters to Clint and Meredith pleading with them to come forward if they knew anything, even if they had promised Brian they wouldn't share it. Okay, let's go back and unpack some of this, because this is a big topic of conversation online regarding Clint and Meredith. They were the last people to see Brian. The way they separated has raised some questions, and then you have this behavior afterwards. Could it be just them taking precautions because they feel that law enforcement is looking at them? Or is this consciousness of guilt? Do they know they did something wrong and they're trying to avoid getting themselves in trouble? I don't know. And I know, and you don't know. None of us know. I don't have problems with people lawyering up. I actually recommend it. I've said it multiple times on this show. I've said it on Crime Weekly. There's nothing wrong with getting a lawyer. I don't look at that as a sign of guilt. I would think that although Clint would get a lawyer, he would still be willing to communicate with law enforcement and participate in a grand jury if summoned, which he didn't do. That I do have a problem with. If you have nothing to hide and your story is the same over and over, just repeat it. The fact that he wasn't willing to come in and speak does raise some concerns for me. It doesn't necessarily mean he's connected to what happened to Brian, but it does make me wonder if he knows more than what he's saying. And if he does, why is that? Why wouldn't he be willing to say it if it's not going to help us find Brian? So there's a lot of questions here, and I would say to everybody listening and watching, if you find yourself, unfortunately, in a similar situation where you're being questioned by law enforcement and you feel, even if you don't feel, that they're coming after you, get a lawyer. There's nothing wrong with having that guidance. But if you care about the person involved or the family connected to this tragedy, bring your lawyer in, answer their questions, and go on with your day. Be a help, not a hindrance. So I don't like the fact that Clint just kind of dropped off the radar. Maybe he has his reasons. Maybe there's more behind the scene that happened where, I don't know, a detective or someone in law enforcement was disrespectful to him, or he got word that they were trying to pin something on him and maybe he knows he didn't do it. That could be a reason. Or, devil's advocate, he is involved, and unless they have something concrete to pin him down, he's not going to help him. I hate to say it, that's also possible, but I think at this point, 18 years later, we may never know. All right, so back to the story, because I wish I could say the sad news is over in this one, but unfortunately, that's not the case, because on September 14th, 2008, tragedy struck the Schaefer family again when Randy was killed after a tree limb fell on him while he was cleaning up storm debris. Now, after Randy's death, progress in Brian's case slowed down even further, and in 2013, Brian was legally declared dead as a way to free up assets for his brother, Derek. A year later, police revealed that they had three theories about Brian's disappearance, but none they could discuss publicly. Now, why would they do this? I don't know. There's a lot of things that happened when I was a police officer that I didn't completely understand. Sometimes it can be pressure from the community. Sometimes it can be political pressure. You may have a chief who's trying to keep his job, and if people are complaining about the work being done on the Schaefer case, they may want to put a statement out to say, hey, we're still working on this. We have some potential theories. We just can't share them. And I do think they have theories. We all have theories. I have theories that I'm going to discuss tonight. It doesn't mean we have anything to substantiate them, but there's probably something more going on behind the scenes here where there's really no justification for saying this. It just makes people ask more questions. But if I had to guess, something happened internally where the chief or a lieutenant or a captain was basically told, hey, we need you to put out something to just reassure people that we're still working this case. There's probably no substance to it. But again, some things happen in law enforcement that have nothing to do with the investigation itself. It can be just the, you know, the politics of law enforcement, which I absolutely hate, but it's a reality. Over the years, Derek and Alexis have shared their thoughts and theories about what might have happened. Alexis told the Lantern that she no longer believes Brian is alive and suspects Clint knows more than he has let on. Derek agreed, and in an interview with Mel Magazine, he said, quote, I didn't know Clint very well, but I always thought something was off with him. The way he talked about my brother after he went missing, kind of in a negative way, I wouldn't expect that from someone whose friend vanished. Now, I want to pause here and emphasize the fact that police have never labeled Clint as a person of interest or a suspect. And if they have any suspicions about him, they haven't shared that information publicly. And as from where I'm sitting, I don't have anything that makes me believe Clint is directly involved with what happened to Brian. It does seem like they would be able to account for his whereabouts that night through camera footage, through cell phone pings, to kind of check out his story and make sure that what he said he did that night after leaving Brian lines up. So if the police felt strongly about Clint's involvement, I think they would have pushed the issue harder, and it doesn't appear from what I've gathered that's the case, at least on the surface. So I really want people to consider that going forward and don't just assume that because Clint was the last person with Brian and he hasn't completely cooperated going forward, that he's automatically guilty. It could be as simple as there may have been an argument. He knows how that looks. He doesn't want to find himself in a situation where he's being charged for something that he didn't do. So he's being cautious. And although that's unfortunate for the case, that's his right. And it just doesn't necessarily mean that he's the guy involved with this and he's somehow responsible. We don't know. I don't know. The police don't know, clearly. So just keep that in mind as we move forward. Let's keep all options on the table. Now, Brian's brother, Derek, also spoke to the Ohio Missing Dispatch about whether he believes Brian is still alive. And he said that at first, he thought Brian might have run away to deal with the grief of losing their mother. But as more time passed, Derek could no longer hold on to that hope. He was led to believe the worst had happened since, and what I've gathered from that is more than likely he's talked to law enforortment, and based on what they've relayed to him, he has come to the unfortunate conclusion that Brian is no longer with us. In 2016, 10 years had passed since Brian's disappearance, and at that time the police acknowledged the possibility that Brian could still be alive, but stated it was just as likely that he wasn't. They noted there was no evidence of foul play, and said suicide seemed even less likely. Years later, in 2021, an age-progressed photo of Brian was created to show what he might look like at 42 years old. Police released the photo in hopes of generating new leads, but unfortunately, no new information came in. By 2024, Brian had been missing for 18 years. Columbus police told the media that the case is, quote, periodically reviewed, but there was no new updates. Unfortunately, that is the last update I have in Brian's case. He is still missing, and his loved ones remain desperate for answers. Okay, let's get into this perspective, and I have to tell you, I did promise myself that I was going to keep this as clear and concise as possible because, depending on the day, my brain has gone all over the place and I have a lot of notes. So I just want to try to be as streamlined as I can and focus on what we do know. I'm going to go over a couple of theories, but let's try to keep it as fact-based as we can. So this is how I want to approach it. Let's start with the last camera footage we have of Brian at 1:55 a.m. because according to Clint and Meredith, shortly after 2 a.m., they're calling and texting him and he's already not answering. So whatever happened, happened in that small window. And that's where we have the question. Was it intentional on the part of Brian or was there foul play? Did something happen or could it have been an accident? Either way, it's pretty binary. I don't believe that Brian was still in that building. So the question becomes, did he leave on his own or did foul play take place and he was transported out of there? If he left on his own, it still doesn't mean that there was something malicious involved with that. He may have had something occur where he decided to leave through a different exit because he didn't want to be seen. I had alluded to this earlier, but just for the sake of this theory, let's say he got in an argument with Brian. He didn't want to see Meredith and Brian on the way out. He knew they were going to be calling and texting him, so he turned off his phone. And he decided to go out the employee service exit, which wasn't on camera. And upon doing so, he was able to get out of the building, maybe walk down an area where there was no cameras. And up to that point, everything's on the up and up. It's just friends having an argument, him deciding he wanted to go home alone. And unfortunately, at that point, that's where it changed. And he encounters someone who has an issue with him or tries to take advantage of him, maybe commit a crime, rob him, assault him, whatever it might be, and things go south. And unfortunately, Brian is severely hurt or killed, and he's never seen or heard from again. Could be that simple. Now reverse back. If he's inside the bar, and something did happen inside the bar with employees or other patrons, I pose this question to you. How could that go down without anybody else knowing what happened, including Clint and Meredith? Nobody saw this. Nobody heard anything in that small window where there was maybe an uproar or a commotion that would have drawn other people to it. These types of scenarios always bring me back to the phrase, if more than one person knows, it's no longer a secret. And I think it really does apply here. If Brian was inside that building and something went down, something bad went down, more than one person would know what's going on. And when you start to think about culpability and who's responsible for it, there's a spectrum. There's the main offender, the person who killed the person, and then there are other people who know about it or maybe help cover it up. And they have the same amount to lose and a lot less involvement. So when they start getting grilled, they're more than likely to flip, especially if it's just for an employee. And yet that hasn't been the case. Nobody has broke. Nobody has said, yep, something happened. This is what went down. I was there, but I wasn't directly involved. I don't want no part of this. So we would have to believe that the employees or the patrons at the Ugly Tuna are just completely loyal to each other and willing to go down for murder, even if it means they're going to prison for the rest of their life. And I just don't see that as a plausible scenario. So it brings me back to the theory that Brian left on his own two feet. But just for the sake of being impartial and objective, because I know there are people that believe this, if something did go down in the bar and maybe only a few people witnessed it, one way they could get Brian out of there would be that trash chute that I mentioned earlier. And some people have speculated that if he was injured or killed, he could have been thrown in the trash chute, dumped in the dumpster, and then the trash was picked up and transported to the landfill before law enforcement got involved. And this goes back to the top of the story where I said their decision not to immediately investigate this could be significant because timing was so important here, where that delay may have resulted in evidence being removed and brought to an area that can no longer be found. It's buried under 100 feet of trash, so you're never going to find it. And even if you did, unless it was actually Brian, whatever you did find may be so badly contaminated, it's not even useful at that point. So this really ties into the outrage that people have about this case regarding law enforcement not acting sooner. And if this is in fact what happened, I understand it. Because then not going there right away and securing the scene and making sure that the dumpster wasn't emptied or removed from that location before they had a chance to analyze it may be the reason that this case isn't solved. It's that significant. I also want to run over a couple other scenarios. Some I've seen online, some I came to myself, and I want to run through them quickly because I don't want to miss them. The first one being Brian had a plan. He went to this bar. He was upset with life. He was upset with losing his mother. And he wanted to disappear. And so this was a premeditated occurrence where he went to the bar knowing that he was going to take off. I don't think this is possible. I just don't. And I don't like to rule anything out. I'm not seeing it. He was extremely drunk. He was flirting with women, allegedly, getting their number. He had a trip planned. He had just lost his mother, had promised his father who's going to be there for him, was very close with his brother, Derek. Why would he leave all of them? Why would he do that to his family when they've already experienced so much? He would have had to do it with no money, no credit cards, and he basically would have to be a CIA agent because he's left no digital trail as well. I know with the phone, we talk about GPS, but in this case, we got to remember, we're talking 2006. The iPhone didn't come out, I believe, until 2007. So it's not necessarily GPS. It would be pinging off cell towers. But even with that being the case, you would see the cell phone pings as he left the area, and it doesn't appear that's what happened. The phone basically went off from what we know publicly. So I know people believe this is a potential scenario that's more viable than I believe. So I'm putting it out there for you guys, but I truly, from where I'm sitting, from what I know about this case, I just don't think he would have left his family. I really don't. He seemed happy with Alexis. And as I just said, I don't think he would have done this to his brother. Derek needed him, and I don't think he would have left him behind. The next scenario that I haven't really heard anybody mention, but I also think is something that needs to be considered. What if Brian did get out of there, and what if Brian did end up back at his apartment? And what Clint is saying is true, where he went back to the apartment as well. Although there's no signs of anything going wrong, is it possible that we're looking in the wrong place? Is it possible that Brian met up with someone else at his apartment or potentially Clint and something went wrong there? Could his apartment or the area around his apartment be the actual crime scene? I know we don't have any evidence of it, mainly because Brian's phone was off, but he may have turned his phone off because he was pissed off about something that happened at the bar, potentially with Clint. He goes back to his apartment, Clint meets him there, and something goes down. Could that be why Clint doesn't want to speak to the cops? Could that be why Clint has been unresponsive to the summons to go to the grand jury? Again, speculation. Clint is not guilty of any crime, but I don't hear a lot of people talking about this. Yes, we don't have any evidence of Brian making it back to his apartment. Maybe this camera's there that ruled this out. I haven't saw any mention of that, but if we don't, how do we know he didn't make it back there? I know I haven't seen anything of it, but I would like to see something concrete that says, no, Derek, he couldn't have gone back there because there's a camera located at XYZ and there's no way for him to get into his building, into his apartment without passing that. If you show me it, I'm off the scenario. But you have to remember, Clint did say he went back to the apartment and stayed there for hours. And that's interesting to me. Why would you do that? If it's 2-3 in the morning and Brian hasn't came back yet, why wouldn't you just go home? Sometimes you will have suspects take a proactive approach and place themselves at a crime scene, knowing that the potential is there for law enforcement to connect them to that location so that if they're ever questioned about it, they can say, yeah, I told you that I went back there because I went to see if Brian was okay, but he wasn't. And listen, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm only posing this theory to you because as I sit here today, 18 years later, we still don't know what happened to Brian. And I ask myself, why? Was this a bad investigation? Was this the perfect crime? Was it a tragic accident? Was it a deliberate attempt to flee the state that you grew up in and leave your family and friends behind? Or are we looking in the wrong direction? Is there something about this case that people haven't thought of? And that's why we're sitting here still wondering what happened to Brian. The final scenario that I want to bring up is one that I've kind of mentioned throughout this episode, and I do believe is the most likely scenario, which is they're at the bar. An argument ensues between Clint and Brian. And for whatever reason, Brian's pissed off and he decides to go his separate way. And maybe he does say, I'm going to go speak with the band, and doesn't invite them to come over with him. But in reality, he just wanted to get out of there. And knowing that Meredith and Brian were going to be at the bar exit, he decided to take the service exit or the employee exit so that he wouldn't be seen. And he knows they're going to be calling him. So he turns off his phone and he goes out the exit. And if you remembered the phrase I mentioned, if more than one person knows, it's no longer a secret. Well, that could be true. If Brian's walking home in this area that's known for crime and someone approaches him with a malicious intent, something could have happened. Maybe Brian tries to defend himself and things got a lot worse. And because of what happened, the individual responsible who didn't know Brian prior to this event takes him and brings him somewhere. And there are bodies of water that are nearby. As I mentioned, you have the river. You do have a couple lakes. I know some of these areas were drained, but there's a lot of ground to cover. And is it possible they could have missed him? Of course it is. It's a needle in a haystack. So there's a real possibility that whatever happened to Brian happened maybe within 15, 20 minutes of him disappearing. But the reason his phone was off is because he deliberately turned it off, not knowing that was going to make a major issue for this case going forward, because by turning that phone off, you can't even ping him to see where he ended up. Some people have mentioned that he walked toward a Wendy's that was in the area and maybe he encountered someone there. We won't know because, again, his phone was off, so it wasn't pinging. And if that is what happened, unfortunately, that means that Brian is no longer with us. But the person responsible for what happened to him is still out there somewhere. And the hope at this point is that they were stupid enough to tell someone or confide in someone that they trusted who has a conscience, has a heart, and wants to do the right thing. Maybe someone saw something and didn't want to implicate themselves, or maybe didn't want to involve themselves. So they've kept a distance all these years, but it's never too late. Derek is still looking for answers. He deserves those answers. And that's why I want to end this episode with a recap. 27-year-old Brian Schaefer was last seen at around 2 a.m. on April 1st, 2006 at the Ugly Tuna Saloon in Columbus, Ohio. He was wearing jeans, a blue or green striped shirt, and tennis shoes. At the time of his disappearance, Brian, who was a white male, was 6'2", weighed approximately 165 pounds, and had brown hair and hazel eyes. He has a distinctive Pearl Jam tattoo on his upper right arm and a small dot on the iris of his left eye. If you have any information about Brian's disappearance, please contact the Columbus Police Department at 614-645-4545. As always, my final words go out to Brian's friends and family, specifically Alexis and Derek, who have worked so hard over the years to try to find Brian and figure out what happened to him. I know it's discouraging to have more questions than answers. And I just want to say, for what it's worth, from where I'm sitting and what I've learned, I just don't see a world where Brian left you voluntarily. He appeared to have loved his life. Yeah, we all have problems, but he wanted to be there for his father. He wanted to be there for his younger brother. And he seemed like he was going in the right direction with Alexis. So whatever happened, I think there's someone out there who is directly involved with Brian's disappearance. And I'm hoping that down the road, if there's something that Clint or Meredith know that could help us rejuvenate this case, get it going again, maybe in the right direction, I really do hope they come forward. And if they're not involved, I understand that at this point they had to move on with their life. And if there's someone else out there, like I said, who has information that may seem like it's trivial at this point, what do you have to lose by calling the number that I've already mentioned? Make the call. You don't know what Columbus Police already has, and something you may say may take two different endpoints and connect them together and get this case where it needs to be, which is solved. I'm really hoping that day comes. I'm happy to be back this year. We have a lot more cases coming. Throughout the rest of this year, we're going to do some big ones. We're going to do some more obscure ones. And I'm hoping we have some more updates. I just got off the phone with some people who said we do have a big update in one of the cases we covered last year. I'm going to wait to see how that develops because I don't want to ruin anything, but I'm hoping that's not the only one. So glad to be back. I hope everyone stays safe out there, and I'll see you next week.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.